lot of you guys already know who Latasha is, but for those of you who don't, I had the pleasure of interviewing Latasha James, who is a content creator, an entrepreneur, all-round super woman. She helps freelancers and content creators earn money, make a living, and have fun whilst doing it. Latasha is across multiple platforms. She has a production agency, a membership, courses, and no team. So she does all of this by herself, plus with the help of some freelancers, which is so incredible. In today's episode, Latasha shares her lessons, challenges, and tips on how to succeed as a creator and entrepreneur. She shares her story, inspirational advice, and explains that she knows all about imposter syndrome. Please note that we unfortunately had some audio issues when we were recording this episode. We wanted to share it with you anyway, but just keep in mind the audio quality isn't as high as it usually is. Enjoy.
Latasha, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it. I'm really excited to talk to you today, to hear about your journey, some of the challenges, how you overcome them, like all of that stuff, because yeah. I've been a fan of your channel for a really long time. So yeah, I'm excited to dive into it.
Yeah.
For anyone who's listening who isn't familiar with your content, how would you introduce yourself?
I help freelancers and content creators earn more money, make a living, and most importantly, have fun doing it. I'm really very big on like enjoying the process, enjoying what you're doing, not hustling, grinding just because you feel like you have to. So yeah, I create content about anything involved with entrepreneurship. I do vlogs, but I also do like tutorials and explainer type videos. I have a podcast called Freelance Friday. So yeah.
Amazing. I'm curious, have you always had that approach to work, like the anti-hustle?
No.
No, because I didn't either. That grew over time.
Yeah.
So what was your approach like in the early days?
Yeah, I mean, definitely think that boomerang effect. I mean, I was raised by a single mom, so I always saw her working super hard because she had to. Mm. And I love her for that. And I love that I got my work ethic from her. My dad was also in the Air Force. So he was very like, you know, much about discipline and routines and all of that stuff. So I think that was really hammered into me very young, which I'm grateful for. But I think I took it really, really far to the point of burnout and exhaustion. Right. Mm. I mean, when I was working in corporate, I was also running my business. I was running a, you know, kind of full-time business, to be honest with you, while I was working in corporate, while doing YouTube, while doing all the things. And I reached success. Like, I'm very happy with where I am. But I was like, I don't know what I have to show for it, you know, from an internal point of view.
Yeah.
Nobody sees the numbers in the bank account. Like, as long as your basic needs are covered, that's what's important. And so, yeah, it's been a new approach to life, I would say.
Yeah, no, I had something similar in the sense that I felt like that was the only way to almost be worthy of success, is if you're like burning yourself out. Otherwise, it's not fair to experience it. Yeah, so I had to really learn that the hard way as well.
Yeah.
So take me back to, first of all, what were you doing in the corporate world? Similar stuff to what you do now?
Yeah, corporate marketing. Yeah. I went to school for film, actually. Mm-hmm. I was freelancing while I was in school as well, just doing freelance writing, freelance social media stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I got a job at a Fortune 500 like automotive company, worked there in their marketing department for a while. Then I went to a Fortune 500 staffing company doing social media. So yeah, social media management, ads management, corporate.
It sounds like you had a really good job, you know, like Fortune 500. So, and you were, that was also where you were when you were building your business on the side.
Yeah.
So how long were you doing both?
I got my first corporate job in 2015 and I left in early 2019.
So oh,
about 4 years. Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh. How were you doing it for that long?
Youth.
Yeah.
being in my early 20s. Caffeine. Mm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. My gosh. So what was the catalyst that finally got you to the point where you're like, you know what? No, I've got to go full time doing this.
Yeah. Honestly, I set a dollar amount. That's where it started. I was like, okay, you know, I was listening to all the podcasts and everyone's like, save like 6 months of expenses. Mm. I did that faster than I thought.
Right.
You know, I was like, oh shoot.
you're like, now what?
Yeah. I'm like, I'm not ready yet. And I really did love my job. I actually got to work from home 3 days a week too. So it was like very flexible.
So I didn't really have that push to leave.
Yeah.
And then in late 2018, my dad passed away really, really young. He was 51 and he had like kind of a very tragic life. He dealt with addiction throughout his whole life. And it was very much like a wake up call for me. Life is short. 51 is so young.
So
I'm
young.
Like, you know, that's like tomorrow to me. And I'm like, I don't want to live the whole rest of my life not at least giving this a try, or even just like the little things. Like when that happened, I just wanted to be with family so much, you know. My mom's only 2.5 hours away, but it's still working the 9 to 5, you know. It was just very hard to get
there. There's not as much flexibility. Even if you have 3 days working from home a week, you still have to be working within certain times.
Yep.
And as long as you have that, your ability to like see your parents and just kind of go somewhere on the whim is practically non-existent.
For sure. So I think that was really the push. I was just like, I've been building this business. I have the option, which a lot of people don't. You know, a lot of people would not be in that position. Like, why not just give it a try?
Yeah.
So,
So how did you build the business to that point? Were you using social media as like a marketing tool already?
Yes and no. So I started my YouTube channel actually when I was in my undergrad. I was probably 21 or 22. Mm-hmm. And I started it just because I liked makeup and fashion and just, you know, it was that era of YouTube. I had no idea that all of this was possible. I had no idea people were making money from it. If anything, I thought they were making like a few bucks on AdSense, you know, like didn't think it was a whole industry. So I just did it for fun. And as I grew and, you know, my life changed, I took my audience with me. So I started vlogging when I got my first corporate job, talking a little bit here and there. Oh, I got this writing client. And people would ask questions like, what does that mean? What does having a client mean? I mean, this was when freelancing was not really so popular.
Yeah.
So people are curious. So I just started talking about it. So it kind of became this natural marketing thing. I still don't like push my services on my YouTube channel. It's just more of just telling my story. And if people are interested in it, they'll dig deeper.
So would you say that you have a niche?
I'm really curious how you feel about this actually, because I have like such a love-hate relationship with niche, that whole, because I agree. I think you should have a focus. I think you should, you know, I'm not going to be talking about like, I don't know, burritos and then like handbags and then, you know, like you gotta be kind of reel it in. But at the same time, I have to be authentic to me. I can't just, I know there are things that I could do to crack the algorithm. You know, I know there are things that I could do to do better and all of these, but it just doesn't feel super authentic to me. Not to say that there's anything wrong if that is what people do, but I've always used storytelling as just, you know, a way to just share what I'm passionate about at the moment. So,
Yeah. So I am similar in the sense that I don't believe that you have to have a niche to grow.
Yeah.
I think the trouble is that when you niche down, you can grow quicker.
Yeah.
And that will remain the case for such a long time. It's just how it works. It's how algorithms want you to behave. Like, it's just how it works. But that being said, if you were to pick a niche and then niche down into it and you don't like it, and you're not passionate about it, then you're not going to see the growth anyway. It's not like this one-way ticket where they're like, well, I've picked a niche now, so therefore I'm going to see success. And that's just not how it works.
Yeah.
For some people, they pick a niche where they're like, this is genuinely the only thing I want to talk about, and then it just perfectly works.
Yeah.
But then I have creator friends who I don't think have a niche at all, but they have such a specific audience.
Mm-hmm.
So like they talk about different things, but they're always speaking to people who are a certain age, at a certain life stage, who are interested in certain things.
Yes.
So yes, their topic is varied, but it's always through that lens.
Yep.
And they're incredibly successful.
Yeah.
And they also have the freedom to talk about different stuff.
For sure.
There's never one way to see success, is there? There's always so many different paths.
Yeah, and it's wild because, I was making beauty and fashion content, you know, in the early, I don't know, 2013, I guess, 2014, I think is when I officially started. I still have audience members who've been with me through that whole thing. I mean, it's not the overwhelming majority. So definitely some people have dropped off, but there are people who are like, I just like following your journey. And maybe you inspired me to take a freelance client or try something different.
Yeah.
Even though I found you from like an eyeshadow tutorial. So
yeah.
Guys, I'm interrupting my own podcast. I know how rude of me, but I just need to tell you about something. So you may not know this, but there are hundreds of creators who are currently growing their online audience. Yes, even on a social media platform like Instagram, they're earning hundreds, if not thousands of pounds per month through social media alone. And they are creating better content while spending less time on content creation. I know that sounds like that's not possible, but I'm here to tell you that it 100% is. And they're doing all of this with the help of The Collective. Now, the Creator Project Collective is our digital membership and mobile app, which is responsible for so many creators fast-tracking their journey. We're able to help creators do this by offering continuous support, whether it's bi-weekly coaching opportunities with guest experts, or simply giving creators the opportunity to get their burning questions answered. Creators are also getting access to an entire library of masterclasses, including deep dives into topics such as how to work with brands, how to diversify your income, or how to really grow on YouTube. All the way through to our quick bites, which are mini lessons where we answer your questions in 5 minutes or less. We're also helping creators grow, and we're doing this by giving them the opportunity to collaborate with other content creators and also giving them promotional opportunities to help spread the word of their content as well. And speaking of collaborations, we also send weekly brand partnership opportunities directly to creators so they don't need to waste any time trying to figure out where their next brand partnership is going to come from. Honestly, there's so much more, but I know that you're keen to get back to the episode. So I recommend that you head to the link in the show notes, join the collective. It only takes a few minutes, and then you'll have every single thing that you need to grow an audience and earn an income. Thank me later.
So what's your kind of relationship with, or maybe the role of your social media channels at the moment in terms of your overall business?
I mean, YouTube is really my number one platform. I love YouTube. I still am very, you know, in love with it as both a viewer and a creator. So I start pretty much everything from YouTube. You know, I think YouTube first, even with the podcast. And that's kind of the big thing that I'm consistent with. The rest I'm repurposing a lot. I'm doing when I feel really inspired to do it. And yeah, I mean, it is, YouTube is like 80 to 90% of my traffic at any given month. Yeah. I mean, it's wild. So really, I try different things. I dabble in different things, but it's pretty much YouTube is driving everything.
What other channels are you on?
TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn. I mean, I will say LinkedIn is actually a big one when it comes to the agency work. So I do still run a creative agency. I take selective projects. I'm not like hustling day in and day out. But most of those clients are coming from LinkedIn, actually, just from, and not like a posting strategy. There's no, like, my LinkedIn is kind of a mess. If you go to it right now, it's really just about relationships, you know, connecting with people you meet at events like this or people even from the corporate world I work with on projects with them.
So you are on multiple social media platforms. Yeah. You have a production agency. Mm-hmm. You also have membership and you have courses.
Yeah.
And do you have a team?
No.
How?
I know.
How are you doing all the things with our team?
I know. At one point, I had like a 7-person team.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't love it. I didn't love, it's funny because in like in college, I always worked in retail. I was always in management positions and I loved being a leader in that way. Like I loved training people. I loved hiring people. For my own business, I hated it.
Yeah.
I'm like, I want to put my hands on the camera. Yeah. I want to script. I don't want to give these things to other people. And I know I kind of felt bad about this for a while. I was like, I know I should be being a better entrepreneur by like.
Right. Because people will say like, you have to outsource. And
yes. And like, don't do all that work yourself. But honestly, that's my zone of genius is the creative stuff. And when I give that away, I feel like just a worker. Like, I feel like I'm, you know, I might as well just get a job and do if I'm just going to do what other people tell me to do. Mm-hmm. So I didn't love it. Nothing against the people I worked with, obviously. But yeah, and it's about like scaling and being lean. I run a really lean business to where I if I needed to or wanted to, I could make a lot less money and be totally okay. Like I have that flexibility. So
I do. I've always admired and like strived for a lean business. The idea of having a company where there are five or more people and like you don't have a good relationship with your entire team. Like you have some people who work for you, but you don't know very well.
Yeah.
Literally freaks me out. And I always wonder if maybe that will change over time. I'm not sure. But that is always just, that sounds so scary to me. Because you have no idea, from like a management perspective, you have no idea if they feel fulfilled, if you're helping them with their journey very well, because you're so disconnected from it. And then I also would just have a fear because, and maybe this is something I have to work on, I'd be like, I can't be across everything then.
Yeah, yeah, for
sure.
And that
makes me nervous.
Yeah, it is. It's hard. And I will say, I do work with freelancers, like, when needed.
Yes.
So I don't want to, like, if anyone's listening to this, like, hold on, I helped you with that. Like, I absolutely appreciate it. But I don't work with anybody, like, full-time.
Yeah.
These days.
So do you have any systems or processes that you follow to be able to do so much?
I mean, the podcast at this point is down to a science, and you know, that's like what I'm here to talk about too in my talk, is a lot about just really systematizing that process. So I sit down once a week for an hour max, and I'm able to get my social content for all the platforms, my newsletter content. You know, it's like, that's it. I can get creative when I want to and when I need to. I can do extra when I want to and I need to. But for the most part, that is like the base level covering, keeping the flywheel moving, if you will.
Yeah.
So that's the big thing. And then for everything else, everything really follows YouTube. Like I said, I mean, I'm getting a transcript and that's helping me with my newsletters. I'm sitting down. I'm a big time blocker. So I'm a big believer in just sitting down every Monday at 10 a.m. to write the newsletter and, you know, do the things and think about that.
Yeah. It also sounds like you're quite strict and like efficient with your time. Yeah. I'm big on time blocking as well.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I tried time blocking, I'm pretty sure it was when I was already running my business. And I think I did it for a week and I was like, oh my God, I've literally got like a month's worth of work done.
Yeah.
Which is insane when you think about it. Yeah. Okay. So do you use any tools or anything to do, like any AI tools, for example? Because myself and my husband Jamie just went to the 50 AI tools.
Okay.
Did you go to it?
I didn't. I heard so many people raving about it though.
It was just both fascinating to hear so many tools that I hadn't heard of. I thought I had heard of quite a few of them. There were so many I hadn't heard of. Also petrifying.
Yeah.
Some of them, like the deep fake ones, I was like, what's happening? This is actually really scary.
Yeah.
So any tools that you use that you would recommend to another creator that helps you with your production?
Yeah. I hear you on the scary part. And like, I very much am kind of a middle of the road AI person. Like, I'm not like, no, AI is going to take over the world. But I'm also not like, let's outsource my entire everything to AI. So I tread with caution. My philosophy on it is I'm totally okay using AI tools that kind of repurpose or remix my own content. I personally don't want to use things that are just like making things out of thin air, because it's like, where is that coming from? I think there's some ethics questions there. So I use a tool called Cast Magic, which I really like. It enables you to put in your, it started for podcasting, but now you can do any video, webinar, talk, anything like that. Put the link in and it'll give you like bullet points, timestamps.
Right. This is what I need. I've been looking for a tool like this.
Yeah. It's really good.
Okay.
And it'll even give you like LinkedIn posts, newsletters. Oh, obviously, I edit them, put them in my own voice, but it's a good skeleton to start with. And then I also do really like Munch is an like a clip generator. Yeah, so I think those are helpful too. So you're not having to scrub through and find the perfect clips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, I've used Munch for a while and I still use it for my podcast episodes and stuff. I mean, we'll probably use it for this episode.
Yeah.
But I ran a test recently, myself and Hayley. Hayley's the other person who I work with. Yeah. She's my marketing coordinator. We ran a test recently, and it was almost one of those tests where you kind of don't want to see the results because you kind of already know what it's going to tell you.
Yeah.
And the clips that we did ourselves with our video editor outperformed the Munch ones. And this isn't just specific to Munch. I think it's just the fact that we were obviously cherry picking specific things that we wanted included. And then everything from, you know, Munch can find a great clip because it's interesting, but it might include about five or six words that didn't need to be there, you know, that we could have just chopped out. The ones that we edited ourselves just outperformed by so far. I was like, oh, this is actually quite frustrating because I don't want to start like paying for eight clips every single time, which I'm not yet. So Munch is a great like affordable option. But I think in the future, we're probably going to have to switch it and just start paying for the individual clips because they performed so much better, which is expected, but a shame.
For sure. And I honestly do a lot of that already because I edit my own videos. It's wild. Again, like I went to school for film. I've been editing videos since I took my first film class when I was 14. I've been doing this for decades now at this point almost. So it just comes really naturally to me. But because I edit my own videos, I'm like pulling those clips as I'm going. Munch is great for like the backlog. If I'm like, oh, this video performed really well 2 years ago. Let's repurpose it now.
That's, I can't believe you edit everything yourself. But there are always like different types of creators in terms of people who like find comfort in editing and then people who don't. And I'm very much I'm someone who doesn't. like, oh my God, it's taking so long. I'm guessing you find comfort in it.
I do.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it.
Yeah, that's amazing. So talk to me about kind of like your income streams at the moment and how they've evolved over time.
So I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I think courses are about 40% of my revenue. And then after that is probably sponsorships at maybe 20 to 30%. The rest is made up full service agency work, affiliate income. I know affiliate income is about 9%.
Yeah,
those are the big ones, I would say. Any type of like coaching, things like that, or little speaking, small bits there and there. You
know? And has it always been similar, or have any income streams like massively varied?
Definitely a lot of variation.
Really?
So when I first, like when I first went full time with my business, it was 90% full service work, maybe 5% courses. And then every year it kind of inched its way up.
Yeah.
To now it's the majority of my income. Yeah.
And in terms of your audience who you serve, it's mostly freelancers, right? So it's people who want to make a career in freelancing to do with social media. How have you found some of the challenges that they're experiencing? Have you seen a change over time?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the number one thing is just the social media landscape has changed so much, even from, you know, 2018, 2019, especially from when I first started in social media. It used to be that you just ran a Facebook page or a Twitter, and you were posting quote graphics.
Yeah,
and,
oh God, I miss those days. Right? I miss the quote graphics.
Compared to now. Now it's like everyone has to learn how to do video. People have to learn how to be on camera sometimes. Mm. You know, so there's just, what I have really moved to teaching my audience is specialty, like learning how to find your zone of genius, what you really like to do, because I really, like I said, going back to the top of the conversation, I really believe if you like what you're doing, you do a good job at it. So it's, and I think the social media management and social media marketing roles, that's not a one size fits all position anymore. You used to be able to hire one person to do that. No. I mean, unless you're maybe like a one person mom and pop show or whatever. Any large company needs a video person, a TikTok specialist, a, you know, organic, a paid. So finding where they fit in, that's really what I like to teach.
No, I love that. And I know, like, speaking of, you know, challenges that people are experiencing and how that's evolved over time, I've noticed that you've recently started sharing a lot of, like, social media news videos, which I absolutely love. So what have you seen recently in the world of kind of social media that's caught your eye, or that you think is maybe an opportunity, or maybe something that's a bit negative?
I mean, there's so much AI news. Every time I do, I do one of those videos once a month at this point. And every single, you know, month, there is something new coming with AI. One of the big things, there was a Taylor Swift, like, deep fake on Twitter, which was horrible. And so I think the social platforms, especially as we're going into election season here in the States, they really need to get that under control, and they know that. So it'll be really interesting to see what Meta does, and Twitter X, you know, does to safeguard against those things. So that's something I'm watching very closely. Threads, you know, Threads actually is what launched that series, to be honest.
Really,
I guess I'll say Elon Musk launched it, because when everything really started to get shaken up over, I guess, last summer, I was like, we need to talk about this. Like, something big, a big shift is happening here. And I think after the first episode of that, Threads got rolled out. And so, yeah, it's really, I'm still very curious to see how that platform evolves and grows.
But it seems to be on and up this year.
For sure.
It seems to be going from strength to strength. It definitely had a bit of a moment. It was so interesting to see a platform experience so much success so quick, because it was almost like, I don't see how you could possibly sustain this. There was just no way. It was almost, I'm sure it was a positive thing now, but at the time I was thinking, this is going to be bad for you, surely. Because if it's going to die, it's going to really die.
Right.
So I'm very impressed by the fact that they're reporting like an increase in engagement and an increase in people signing up now. That must have taken so much work to try and claw that back.
I think it's really interesting, because we went from seeing, like, being overloaded with video, and I love video, but I was like, oh my gosh, I'm burnt out on video on every single app. And I think people are really drawn to just this very simple, show up as you are. You can use it from your bed or, you know, wherever. You don't have to get all like made up, get on camera. So I think people are really craving that. So it'll be interesting.
I wonder if we'll just slowly go backwards, because now that I think about it, if you think about like notes on Instagram, for example, that is a Facebook status. That is what we're looking at, basically. And it almost feels like we're going to do a big full circle and go back to the times of good old fashioned status update.
Yeah.
How much easier would our jobs be?
I know, right? Right? I'm here for it.
Okay, well, this has been such a great conversation.
Yeah.
Do you have any parting advice that you'd give to any creators listening who either want to become freelancers or just want to, you know, make their content creation a full-time job?
I think you are the secret to your own success. And you got to keep that in mind. It is really easy to look at what everybody else is doing. And it's intimidating. I was talking to some people even at this event who are like, oh my gosh, like there's so many amazing people here. Like I'm getting imposter syndrome. And I'm like, there's only one you, you know? So don't compare yourself to other people. Like it's not sustainable if you do that. If you try to copy people or be like other people, you got to just let your weirdness shine through. I'm like, I'm weird and awkward and goofy. And like, that's fine. Like your people will find you. So that's my best advice.
I love that. That was amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
You've just listened to an episode of The Creator Project. We upload new episodes every single week, so if you've not hit that subscribe or follow button yet, then what are you doing? Be sure to hit subscribe or follow before you leave so that you don't miss out on our new content. If you feel like supporting our podcast, we would absolutely love it if you could leave us a review and share our podcast with someone else who might get value from it. Don't forget to hit us up on our socials. Links can be found in the show notes. Thanks again. We'll speak soon.